Society for Poems for People Who Hate Poetry.
I love Christmas songs, and I wish that Christmas songs came earlier than they actually do. I know a lot of people complain about it, but I think that's silly. If you want to complain, great, go complain. But I'll listen to Christmas songs even in the summer. And thank goodness for things, for new technologies like iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all these things that you can go to Pandora, Spotify, all these things that you could just listen to, you know, Christmas music or any type of music that you want year round. And I love that. I'm glad I don't have to wait, you know, like they had to do in the old days of the early 2000s or the 1990s. Ugh, how horrible. I love that we live in this amazing time. We live in a great time, but we also live in a really disgusting time. Today, I'm going to talk to my friend Amy Cho about the song Baby It's Cold Outside and how people are attacking this song, how feminists in particular are attacking this song. And they bring up a term, these feminists, like, and they call it rapey. Now, I'm going to make a claim here that the most nefarious, disgusting, horrible human beings are the editors of feminist magazines like Cosmo, Salon, Vox. These creatures who no real man in their right mind would ever want to fuck. That's right, I said that. These creatures are like a plague infecting the minds of good men and particularly of good women. That good women who really want to just enjoy their life, you know, have a good time, who feel a strong desire to sleep with the man, but they feel like this measure of guilt just kind of crawl up there and they don't know where it comes from. And, you know, it's not just the Cosmo people, because the Cosmo people get it from their Yale professors and shit. But there is a plague that's just rotting the core of humanity. In the past, that plague was the dogmatic church. It was like they were a plague. They went around and murdered people. They kept people in subjugation. You know, we get the Dark Ages. Well, the new church is feminism. Feminism is doing the same thing that the church did during the medieval times. They're trying to destroy sex. They're trying to claim that a song like Baby It's Cold Outside is rapey. Talk about a nonsensical word. Rapey? You can't be rapey, idiot. You either rape or you don't. You either murder or you don't. There's no such thing as murdery. You gotta be kind of murdery. These feminists are ugly bitches. And I mean that, you know, ugly on the outside and ugly on the inside. But what really worries me is that everyday normal women are being infected little by little without realizing it. Part of the purpose of this whole podcast, Poems for People Who Hate Poetry, is I want to emphasize the power of words. Words have power. If you are always considering that, you know, sex is a problem, that you're only looking at the negative sides of sex, you think of sex as dirty, horrible, disgusting, men as rapists, pigs. If that's the wording and the framework that you're always thinking about sex, then how can you ever think positively about sex? Because you're infected with these things, these words that go into your ear hole and infect your soul and blacken your heart, because that's what these bitches want. Now, why they want it, we'll get into that a little bit. Now, I want to protect Amy here a little bit. She does not fully agree with a lot of my ideology on this. I don't want to imply a lot of things. She's not a professional intellectual. She's a smart lady. You know, she's not a professional media person. She's just a normal girl. She works in marketing for Eigen Development in Vancouver, Canada. And, you know, her and I have just been friends for years now. And we've had a lot of conversations about dating. We've actually met a couple of times at conferences over the years. But, you know, she lives in Vancouver. I live in the United States. I live in Texas right now. So my point is that I want to protect her from any kind of backlash. If anybody, you know, were to listen to this and hate what I'm saying because I'm calling these editors bitches, I don't want her. She has nothing to do with that. But I adamantly accept anything you want to try to do to me. I don't care. But because these women are bitches, there's no other way to call them. I mean, that's the term bitch as it's applied to, you know, a female human rather than just, you know, the dictionary definition of a female dog. They are the epitome of these things, these creatures. And we talk about some other ones, like we talk about women like Lacey Green, if you know her. She's a famous YouTuber who has all this stuff about what consent means and that there are certain instances when consent isn't even possible. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in our conversation is how, you know, feminists hate women. Like, it's such a weird thing. And so when we're having our conversation, we're going to dig into, you know, Amy and I are going to dig a little bit into the idea of the implications of a lot of the words that people use. We're going to, you know, analyze with the just kind of what are the words that editors and writers at Vox, at Salon, at Cosmo, at Huffington Post, who attack Baby It's Cold Outside, you know, what are their motivations? What terms are they using? How are they using these words and why it's a problem? And then the poem that I chose, though, so the Baby It's Cold Outside is just a song we're going to talk about because it's such so prevalent in our culture and it's so prevalent right now. But the poem that I chose is The Garden of Love by William Blake. And I love William Blake. He's one of my favorite poets because he attacked the dogmatic church, even though he was a very, very supernatural religious type of a person. But he didn't like the, you know, and I'm not religious at all. I'm an atheist. But I liked how he essentially tries to keep the glorious elements of the church. You know, he does have a lot of negative stuff with his supernaturalism, but he keeps a lot of the glorious elements that you get from religion. But he drops the ludicrous, inane, destructive, horrific things that you get, ideas that you get from the church. And he has a line at the end of this poem, The Garden of Love, which is a very short poem, where he goes, "And priests in black gowns were walking their grounds and binding with briars my joys and desires." You know, and there's a, if I were to label this podcast today, I would call it Tombstones Where Flowers Should Be. And I think this is what feminists today are doing. I wish it was only feminist intellectuals, but unfortunately it is infecting normal everyday women. This is why I'm so adamant about it. Because when I talk to normal women about this, even, you know, good, especially good smart ones, they are infected with this hatred. And they don't even realize the implications or the motivations of how it's affecting them. And that's what we're going to kind of dig into, is that you don't even know sometimes when your mind is infected with words. You know, I think it was Iago who from Othello, who's, you know, famous for killing, for basically causing Othello and Desdemona to kill themselves. But he does it with words. And that's the power of that story. It's why it's the greatest piece of theater ever in the history of humanity. And he uses words, and they're like this disgusting earworm that goes into the ear and infects the mind, and the mind starts to plague and rot from the inside. And then eventually it manifests itself outside in this jealousy and this rage and this distrust and this doubt. And that is what these stupid bitches are doing. Okay, I'm going to stop calling them bitches right now. But that's the last time. But, you know, I'm very, very disgusted by this attack on Baby It's Cold Outside. So stick around. Don't get turned off yet. We're going to have some fun in this conversation as well, because we're talking about consent. You know, we're talking about, you know, rape. And, you know, how rape is obviously horrible. Like, the fact that we have to say that it's obviously horrible is ridiculous. But what is consent? Where is the line between consent and seduction and persuasion? And when can a guy beg and not beg? Is that a good thing? Is that horrible? It's probably a bad tactic, but is it, like, immoral? Is he raping her if he begs her to have sex? Which, you know, women like, or feminists like Lacey Green talk about. So there's a lot of that type of stuff. And so next I'm going to read the poem, The Garden of Love, which is like 10 lines. It's very short. And then I'm going to bring on Amy Chow, my good friend Amy Chow, who is not responsible for anything I say on this show. So just be clear about that. And, you know, we're going to talk. She's going to, you know, bring a feminine perspective. And, you know, we're going to have, and she's a very smart lady. So we'll have a talk, discussion about The Garden of Love and Baby It's Cold Outside. So stick around.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The
This evening has been
I'm hoping that you
so
dropped in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hand.
The Garden of Love by William Blake. I went to the Garden of Love and saw what I never had seen. A chapel was built in the midst, where I used to play on the green. And the gates of this chapel were shut, and "Thou shalt not" writ over the door. So I turned to the Garden of Love, that so many sweet flowers bore. And I saw it was filled with graves, and tombstones where flowers should be. And priests in black gowns were walking their grounds and binding with briars my joys and desires.
This evening has been
I'm hoping that you dropped
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like mine.
Hey, Amy, welcome to the show.
Hey, hey.
Thanks for coming on. And, you know, I wanted to have you on the show for something, but one of the reasons that I chose you, you know, talk to you about Baby It's Cold Outside and The Garden of Love by William Blake is I was talking to a friend about this subject, and he suggested that I should really try to have a woman on for this show, otherwise for this type of show. Otherwise, it's just two guys or even just me, myself, talking about, you know, rape culture and rape anthem and sex and stuff like that. But I think that's kind of a silly idea personally. Like, I don't think it has to be a woman, but I don't know. What do you think about that? Does there have to be that?
Well, I mean, I can definitely see how it could easily be misconstrued as, like, you know, a couple of guys complaining that women should loosen up and they should be more receptive to their advances and blah, blah, blah. And that could come off as just like two guys complaining that they're not getting laid. So, you know, I think.
Good point.
Yeah.
I like, not receptive. Damn, women, you're not receptive to my advances, no matter what I do. What are those women thinking?
So I can see how, like, having a, you know, the opposite sex weigh in on this will give it a more balanced critique. I'm glad that you picked me for this. So,
well, I'm happy to have you on. I think I agree with that, especially from like an audience perspective. It sounds better. What I do think is like it is a little silly that we can't talk objectively as a man about sex culture. And it's like that perspective about it that we can't, you know, like obviously you shouldn't be complaining to on radio unless it's entertaining, of course, because it can be entertaining. And there are definitely YouTubers. I was just looking at a guy called Raygun on YouTube, and he had an interesting thing about like all men are rapists. And it was an ironic thing. He was reading an article from the New York Times that basically said, and this is recent with all the Weinstein thing, it was a New York Times editorial, opinion editorial op-ed that was saying that basically all men are just rapists. They're all horrible, beastly rapists. And we're like, that is a very positive message to be sharing with the world. Thank you, New York Times, for including that one in the opinion. That's a good opinion to have.
Right, and it wasn't done as like a joke. It was 100%.
Not the New York Times, no. The Raygun guy, that was the joke. His whole thing was a joke. But the New York Times was, I mean, remember, this is an editorial. It's an opinion editorial, so it's not like, and I don't know if it was an official New York Times staff writer or not. I imagine not, but I could be wrong.
Right, but someone put it forth as a real point of view that all men are potentially racist.
Well, but this is a real point of view. It's just interesting that it's, you know, in the New York Times and they're like publishing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the New York Times is supposed to be like a legitimate, you know, it's at least it has been in the past. I don't know if it's going to be in the future, but this a legitimate avenue and place to have a discussion on a national based scale. And, you know, people can write, so anyone can write in. That's always been what it's about. You write into the New York Times, you write in to any of these major newspapers and with your opinions. But of course, they only publish what they want. And now they make editorial decisions based on money, of course. That's a big issue of what are people going to read. And I think that was probably part of what went into this decision. But I just find it interesting that it's like, you know, let's, even if it's for money, like, let's give any credence to this idea that all men are rapists. I mean, think about what that's telling to, like, a 12-year-old girl. If they read that in class or something, or they see the New York Times, like, all men are rapists? Like, that's what I have to look forward to in the future? Or is just getting raped?
Yeah, we look to you know, newspapers to be a source of, like, reasonable points of view. So that is alarming that they included something like that and presented as part of their brand. So that's quite disheartening. Yeah.
But are all men rapists?
Well, that's what we're going to discuss, I guess, right? Like, based on, you know, the reaction to Baby It's Cold Outside, people are quite sensitive to that idea that, you know, that male advances are equivalent to them attempting to rape. So that's the world we live in now, unfortunately.
Well, what do you think? Are all men rapists?
No.
Okay, good answer. No. Simple, simple. End of show.
I don't know why I have to elaborate on that. That's what the crazy part is. Like, well, obviously not.
Well, but if a listener is, like, if there's a feminist listener that may think that, let's say not all men, let's just say that all, or let's rephrase it, like, all men have within them the ability to rape.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Do you think that's true?
Well, we all have the, well, the ability,
or the capacity. Like, all men have it within them. Any man, can, you know, if he's triggered in the right way, can be triggered such that he will, you know, flat out smack you in the head and rape you.
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, it just depends on the person, right? And that's the whole point, is that it's not a homogenous group of potential, like, inner rapists. I think that, like, it just depends on each guy. You just have to just assess them, you know, based on their personality. I don't think everyone has that in them. I don't think so, no.
Well, that's a good question, because that's one of the things I've been thinking about a lot of, you know, I guess we'll, you know, talk more about that in a second when we get into the poem and the song. But the idea of judging men individually and, like, a role that is something that, you know, mothers and sisters and girls should teach other women how to, you know, because we're talking about advice for women. And I notice, you know, there's a lot of this in this, like, culture online especially, but it's bleeding into the colleges where there's literally courses on rape prevention, and then they're expelling boys because they're having sexual, they're having consensual sexual conduct, except that the sex, both parties were drunk, and so they kicked the male out of college, right? And they basically, you know, calling him a rapist because he had sex with a woman who was drunk, but he was drunk too. And somehow his problem. And there's, like, this YouTube female thing, who's a cute girl. It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Lacey Green. Do you know her? Very popular.
Oh, yeah.
She's super popular. Yeah. And she has, like, these ridiculous, you know, consensual rules of how to have sex. I think they're ridiculous. As a guy and as a, you know, trying to be objectively rational about situations and, like, the
what
reality.
What were her requirements? I don't think I've seen them.
Well, so one of them is drunk, right? Even if both parties are drunk, like, she puts that in there. So even if both parties are drunk, you cannot give consent in that case. Like, so in other words, if a man and a woman are going to have sex, if the woman is drunk, even if the man is drunk, then she literally is outside of the agency of being able to say yes or no.
So it's not consent. She's trying to say, here are the things of consent. So where, or excuse me, here are the things where a woman cannot consent, or where she is not even able to have consent. So one of them is drunk, right?
Yeah.
Even if she chose to get drunk, and even if the man is drunk too. And her, go ahead.
So that would be rape in her eyes. Like if they went ahead and had sex, that would be considered rape in her eyes.
Well, that is the implication. She doesn't outright say that, unfortunately. She doesn't have the courage to say that. But but part of the definition of rape, especially in their world, is not giving consent. So then the question is, what is consent?
Yeah.
Right? So if you, so like even if a woman says yes, if she's drunk under this auspices, then she's not giving consent. That's still a no. Right? She's not even able to give consent in this case.
Right, right.
So then, therefore, the conclusion is, yes, it's rape. If that's how you define rape, as, you know, a woman not giving consent, and these are five ways where she can't even, she's not even capable of consent, then yes, it's rape. To both parties be drunk.
According to there are a lot of rapists out there.
There's a lot of rapists.
According to that, yeah. Like, why their worldview is that the whole world is filled with rapists. If that is what qualifies as rape, then then... We live in a world of rapists.
Yeah, there is, I can't remember who said this quote. It's a famous feminist. I don't remember where it comes from. But there's like a feminist that said all sex is rape. And And the, now most people don't take it seriously, but why I bring that up is I do think there's a power in ideas that we don't take seriously. Like we say, oh, that's academic. That's just somebody... You know, some silly, you know, person writing an essay that only a couple thousand people read. But those couple thousand people tend to be high-level teachers of professors who then teach, you know, millions of students. And many of those students become, you know, high school and grade school teachers. And they go out.
Yeah.
And even if they don't accept it fully, just that they hear it, then it, like, allows for this kind of ideology to permeate into their being. So that, you know, sex, they may not say, well, not all sex is rape. But when someone says something like, when both parties are drunk, it's rape, they're like, well, I guess that sounds reasonable. Right? And it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's
acceptable. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, this is ludicrous. Like, everybody, you know, like, I don't think you should get drunk and have sex all the time. I think you're missing out if that's all the way you have sex. But come on. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it just leaves the door open for power and manipulation. You know, if all sex is rape, then, and we all know that that's not really true, but that's the accepted idea. Then, whenever I feel like it's rape, it's rape, whether or not it was, you know, consensual or not. And I think that's kind of what the case is for the idea that it's rape if both people are drunk. Well, it's only rape if someone gets upset afterwards and then actually, you know, decides to take action with that. And that creates a really kind of scary environment where it's not really safe for people to just do what's very normal.
Yeah, that seems like an important part of it.
Scary. Yeah.
Like, how do you deal with that type of thing where someone can essentially have buyer's remorse, but since they can't return, like, go back to you and say, here's your sex, I don't want it anymore. Like, since the act is done, right?
Yeah.
The next day, you know, and how do you deal with that? Like, how do you, it's such a bizarre thing.
It's terrifying. It just makes it terrifying for young men, you
for
know.
For all
to,
men. Young.
For, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, for all men, because it's like, okay, so if I act on what I think is appropriate for this situation, even if she thinks it's appropriate, she could turn around and say and decide it's not appropriate, and then I could have a criminal record at the end of this. And that definitely kills a lot of. I think that dampens the mood.
But that's kind of what I wanted us to talk a little bit about is. Killing the mood. That's what I thought the poem That's part of what I think the poem is saying. The song is not about that at all, but I think all the pundits out there and all the writers of Vox and Salon and Cosmo and all these places, Huffington Post, you know, they have a article, line by line takedown of Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Baby It's Cold Outside to me has always been sort of like, it's just the eternal sort of flirtation between men and women, which is, you know, it's not about what's explicitly said. It's sort of the play between the two of them. And I think, you know, today what has permeated the culture has really killed that that flirtation and made it impossible. So, yeah, that's...
Well, let's go through it a little bit. Is he you know, flirting, or is he manipulating and trying to rape her? Because that's essentially the argument that a lot of people say. Like, in researching and kind of preparing for this, and I'm reading this, all these articles, and there's one in Vox, and they make up words that are so obscure, it's crazy. Like, they have a term that we've all heard, of course, in jokes and stuff, like, that was kind of rapey. Like, rapey is not a real word. It's a slang term. Like, if you look it up in the Oxford Dictionary, there's no rapey. You either rape someone or you don't. Like, you can't kind of be rapey. Like, it's like being kind of burnt. It's like being kind of... You can be creepy. You can be manipulative. Yeah. You can, but, like, rape is a very powerful... It's like you can be kind of murdery. You murder or you don't. Like, you can be kind of pregnancy. No, like, these are terms that are either or, and they're trying to, like, conflate it to be anything that I don't like, any behavior that I want to condemn in this article, essentially, is rapey. And that's what feminists, I think, tend to do.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, when people say, like, oh, that's kind of racist, you know, because maybe, like, an ad didn't feature one of every race. And focused on one race and not another.
It's oh,
like
my gosh, it's so racist.
That's so racist.
Did you see that that video with all, it's like a Australian video with all the religious figures?
No.
Oh, never mind, we can't talk about it. But they like didn't have Muhammad, but they had everyone else there. You know, like Jesus, they had like, you know, Thor and Zeus and stuff. They had like everybody there. But not Muhammad, like all the major ones. Anyway, it was pretty funny, but it got like lambasted as like, why didn't they include him? And then, anyway, but yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Like, you know, that's racist.
Yeah. It's like, well, let's define like what exactly is racist here? Because they didn't include like every single race or whatever. I think it's like a manipulation tactic. I don't think it's, that's good. So, I didn't think about it that way. Like when people say that's kind of rapey, and they're clearly not, it's like, maybe you could say, well, he's definitely into her and he's maybe, you know, trying to be persuasive, but that's a far cry from being a rapist. So.
Yeah. There seems to be this, creeping into the bedroom of this ideology. And
yeah, like destroying the definitions. Like there's just no, the words don't have any, there's no meaning behind them. They just want the power behind them.
The power behind the to be able to say that you're a rapist. And, you know, by like implying that this 1944 song is rapist. And, you know, like, their argument is something like, you know, the back and forth. I won't go through the whole song, of course. So I don't know if I'll, you know, I don't want to bore everyone with my horrible singing. But you know, it's like, you know, it's like I really can't stay. Blah blah blah. It's cold outside. I've got to go away. So she's like talking about how she can't stay, and that's how it starts. And he's making an argument essentially. Now, a lot of people are calling this argument rapey because it's manipulative. Like, you know, my mother will start to worry. Beautiful, what's your hurry? Father will be pacing the floor. Listen to the fireplace roar. So really, I'd better scurry. Beautiful, please don't hurry. And then maybe just a half a drink more. Put some records on. So he's basically you know, not nagging her, although he does kind of nag her a little bit, I think. But, mm-hmm. but you know, he is very persistent and pushy. Like, it's cold.
Yeah, but he's quite receptive to it. The girl, like, she's just like, she's like, oh, I should go. And then, you know, oh, you know what, maybe just a little bit more. So she's obviously, it's a game. I don't think he's manipulating her. I mean, I think they're both manipulating each other, but in like a fun way, in a harmless way.
Here's what Vox says. I think they do a lot. So like in that first stand, that first little section, I really can't stay, but baby, it's cold outside. I've got to go away. The evening has been so very nice, right? And I'll hold your hand. Mm-hmm. So they say that the rapey. So they have like a breakdown where there's a romantic version, a romantic analysis, and a rapey analysis, which again, the term rapey is ludicrous and on its face.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. You know, it's like you can. So if they were to have said romantic and kind of creepy, I would be like, all right, I can feel that. But the fact that they call it rapey, like, this is what really is absurd to me. But yikes, he's, you know, so in that stanza, here's what Vox has to say. Yikes, he's starting to put pressure on her to stay. That's not cool. Women are socialized to be polite and even a little flirtatious when rejecting a man's advances to avoid making him angry or even violent. Sure, she said she had a nice time, but does she mean it? We don't know. And he doesn't seem interested in finding out. So essentially what they're saying is it's not cool to try to persuade a woman to stay with the implication that maybe she'll have sex with you if you stay, which is true. I mean, obviously, I want a woman to stay so we might have sex. And so I might try to persuade her. And in this case, mm-hmm. the guy is putting pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the big surprise there? It's like, yeah, that's...
But that's rapey is what they're saying. They're saying it's rapey to have pressure.
Yeah, that's, again, like saying everything is racist when there's nothing racist going on. It's just, he just wants to sleep with her, but that doesn't mean he's going to rape her.
Well, let's play devil's advocate. I mean, let's say that manipulate, like, because there is a line, right? Manipulating, lying, cheating, you know, like the stuff that Weinstein would do, for instance, where he would where he would say something like, I haven't like studied it or anything, but I think a lot of the stuff he would say is, I'll help you get parts in a movie, you know, mm-hmm. if you fuck me, basically. Like, that's essentially what it comes down to, right? So that is obviously complete manipulation, coercion, you know, power pressure, to the point mm-hmm. where it's gross and, you know, very worthy of condemnation.
Well, yeah, definitely. But I don't know a lot about this case, but I've seen a couple like clips here and there of people who discussed it in more detail. And like, one of the things that was like how these things played out was that he would invite them to his hotel room alone and then make the proposition. He's disgusting, of course, but then I think that there needs to be a discussion about like, why did you go to his room alone to begin with? What did you expect? Like, he's a, you know, 62-year-old man or however old he is.
Well, since it's now, he's been doing this for like 30 years.
Yeah.
He's been doing this since like his 30s.
Yeah, and apparently he was notorious and had this reputation. I don't know what the whole story is with how all these situations played out, but from what I understand, a lot of these women, they were invited into a hotel room alone with a known pervert. So
a lot
you
know, of
you can demonize him and he is a demon, but there needs to be some kind of just street smarts from the women on that
that's
issue.
A good word. Street smarts. Well, I did want to talk about that. I want to make sure we don't leave all of these topics, but there is something where feminists and this movement that's occurring now probably has some good and some bad.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's, you know, obviously a creep needs to be, a, you know, called out. I think that's important. Yeah. And I think now what kind of legal statutes are, you know, obviously I think the law should be made simple here. Force, you know, if it's applied, that's illegal. Right? If you force yourself, if you drug, if you beat, you know, if you hit a girl in the head or if you slip her a roofie, those types of things are clearly supposed
to, that's right.
You know, yeah, that's the law.
Definitely rape. Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm all for everyone calling him out and saying, you're a disgusting human being. We don't want to work with you anymore. You have too much power. So, like, I like that social media has allowed for this ability to come out a little bit, like, on a grander scale. And the tables have turned in the power sense, I think, absolutely, in terms of within this industry. Because I think the word power is used a little bit too loosely. Like, it's, he has power within this industry, but you can choose not to work in that industry, or you can choose to struggle outside of his reign, right?
Mm-hmm. And know, expose him, which is what's gone, what's happened now. So,
It's finally happened. Yeah. And that's good. And it's happened because of social media. Someone was courageous enough to say that he pressured me. You know, I don't know enough about the lawsuits or the legal stuff to talk about it, but I think the legal stuff should just be like, did he manipulate or, you know, fraud them or, you know, proposition them where it's like, I'll literally pay you. Like, if there's a prostitution aspect, you know, I don't know. Although I don't think prostitution should be illegal anyway. But, you know, it's just, so the thing that I see about this culture today that we're living in America and maybe Canada too, where you are. I don't know if it's worse there, because I know Jordan Peterson comes out of there, and you guys are like, you know Jordan Peterson, right?
The professor. Of course.
Yeah. He's a very smart, intellectual professor. He's kind of almost like a rock star at this point of intellectuals.
He is.
Of academic intellectuals. It's like, if they're, like, it's so weird that there can be such a thing as like a rock star intellectual. But I saw this video of him, and it's like of he's talking about eye contact and seduction in class, you know, in one of his classes. And he's got like his shirt open, you know, a couple buttons down. And like, you know, I was like, damn, bro, go for it. Don't even give a shit. Like, good for you. But anyway, so we have this culture that seems to, like, these feminists are claiming to be for women, pro women. Mm-hmm. That's their whole shtick. Yep. Feminism is like, I love women. Let's protect women. But they seem to have absolutely no respect for female agency. Like, they're telling females, you're too stupid to make your own decisions. So let's all get together and protect your dumbass. Because that's the implication. Like, if you don't have the ability, the agency to say no. Again, we're talking outside of drugging, you know, outside of the guy. Like, if the guy is sober and he's, you know, filling a girl up with drinks and then he has sex with her, that's wrong. I think that's clearly the same. Like, the same thing as roofie. If you're getting her completely hammered and you're not drinking anything, that's wrong.
Yeah. But, agreed.
So outside of those types of situations, if a girl like what you're saying doesn't have the agency, the free will to say, you know what, maybe I should pursue a different career and not be an actress if this is what being an actress means.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or maybe I should try it with independent films, not work with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's just, it really just puts women in this position where, in relation to men, that men are just, are predatory and dangerous. And, you know, women are helpless and weak. And the only possible relationship between the two is to force men, to make them accountable for their evils, which, yes, you should. But also you should make women understand and embrace their own power as individuals to say, like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. I don't like the situation. What can I do to change it? And I don't think that you hear the feminists really talk about that. At least I haven't. seems more about, you know, making men out to be demonic or guilty just by, you know, just by the fact of their gender. So,
yeah. And he has power within that. So I think there's an element where people are jealous of earned power. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about his biography, but I assume, and I know enough about the Weinstein Company, that they've made a lot of great films. And Miramax, for instance, you know, they made Good Will Hunting. They backed that. Like, they made amazing films. They developed a network of talent that they could work with. They could produce some of the greatest films of the last 25, 30 years. And so yes, with that comes a certain semblance of power within that industry. Because right, they're a hit machine, essentially. Like, they've had flops, but of all the studios and all the producers, like, he's one of the most successful because he's right, done really well. So there is a power within that industry. So it seems like there's a dynamic of in the feminist movement of, well, I want that. But instead of going out and creating it for themselves and going out and create, you know, making movies of, you know, going out and, you know, now that there's YouTube, for instance, start making YouTube and try to make a Netflix original. Instead, there seems yeah, to be this, I want that, so I'm going to tear that person down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I'm not defending him, by the way. I don't want to defend
him. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you have to be careful because, like, obviously this man is, like, he's disgusting and
but he's
be,
a good producer definitely is all I'm saying.
He should be exposed. He should yes, be exposed for the pervert he is. But I think that there are some people who are using this as an opportunity to sort of you know, advance their agenda and you know, blame it on like it's a patriarchy, right? They see that he is a representation of their failure to maybe, you know, be a success in the world, and they're taking it out on, you know, what they see as their oppressors, which are like powerful, you know, successful men, maybe, and that's all they're kind of taking out of this situation. But yeah. I don't think that should be the like what feminism should be about. Not in my opinion.
What do you think feminism should be about?
Well, I mean, what it originally was about, which is just that, you know, women are human beings too. They have individual agency. And if you want...
No, they're not. They have to be coddled. they're not humans. We have to protect them from being raped. So they can't choose to get drunk because then they'll get raped. We can't let
that happen. Yeah, they don't have... Yeah, like, they can't get drunk and make up their own minds. They just have lost the capacity to think.
Men can do it.
Men can do it, but women can't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, yeah, it's unfortunate because they've turned something that, you know, I don't think what feminism was originally about is at all a bad idea, that, like, we should have the same kinds of, you know, rights as any other person. We're not, you know, that doesn't make men and women the same, but they're the same in the sense that we should be equal under the law and we should have the same kinds of opportunities, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, and it's really just morphed into something else. It's just sort of turned into something unrecognizable. It's like a man-hating machine now, which I don't like that.
Did you say man hating or man eating?
Oh, hating.
Okay. But,
yeah, yeah.
We're not talking about cannibalism. Okay, good.
No.
Just making sure. Okay, so in this, I wanted to talk, like, bring up a couple more of these rapey quotes. So in the next part of Baby, It's Cold Outside, you know, it goes, my mother will start to worry. Beautiful, what's your hurry? My father will be pacing the floor. Listen to the fireplace roar. So really, I'd better scurry. Beautiful, please don't hurry. You know, and he's calling her beautiful. By the way, I've heard that I read an article where, I think it was the Huffington Post, I don't know, but they were saying, like, how it's creepy, or he doesn't respect you if he calls you beautiful. Like, if he says, hey, beautiful, that's not respect. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, you can't say to a woman, hey, beautiful, like, come over here. Like, you know, obviously if you don't know her, that's weird. Like, you shouldn't be on the street saying, hey, yo, beautiful, get over here. You know, like, that's fucking not cool.
I don't want to go there.
But, you know, the idea that, like, I couldn't talk to a girlfriend or someone that I've slept with, for instance, or someone that, you know, we've made out, let's say, and I say, hey, beautiful, don't hurry. We're too hurried. Like, that's that bad? And it's like, that he doesn't, I don't respect you.
Yeah, no, that's, I don't know what to say about that. I just don't know what world we live in now where, like, regular banter is you have to, like, you have to watch every word. Otherwise, you will be labeled as, you know, again, like, guilty male. So I don't know what to say to that.
Well, males are dopey a lot of times, to be honest. Males can definitely screw it up. Part of what I was hoping out of this, and maybe I'm, you know, taking in the wrong direction, we can kind of fix the direction of the podcast here. But I was hoping to kind of get into real rules for seduction and persuasion for regular people. Because I think you're right. I think, like, a lot of this stuff only applies to a small subsection of the, you know, populace that takes it seriously. But there are real dangers that we're seeing. Like we're saying, like, if a girl changes her mind, she now has an outlet to change her mind and get the guy. Or, like, you know, as a vendetta. Now, I don't know how often this happens, but I know it has to happen. Where, you know, a girl sleeps with a guy and then he's not interested. Well, now she has, in the past, she couldn't do anything about that. She just had to accept it, you know, like, oh, he tricked me or whatever by pretending he liked me, which is, I'm sorry, just a fact of life. Like, it's happened to guys too. Like, you know, I thought a girl was into me and she wasn't. Like, I'm not going to get pissed off about it. It's normal. Yeah. It's part of human existence. But now women have a way to get back. Like, think about it in college when you're 19, if you're spurned by a dude that you really like and you sleep with him and then later you find out he's not interested, and now you can be like, well, that fucker raped me.
Yeah. Yeah. It does give, like, this really kind of scary power to very unjustly to people. And it makes it weird out there. I'm sure. I mean, I haven't been in the college dating world for a long time now, but I can imagine that it's probably pretty scary and weird to be in that situation, because I think a lot of those ideas are really espoused at, like, campuses, and the idea of, like, consent, and you have to, you know, it has to be done a specific way, and if it's not, it's, you know, that's considered rape. And that's a lot to handle as, like, a young person, and, you know, you're probably going to fall in love at some point in school and or be attracted to someone, and now you have to watch out for, like, all of these little traps that could, you know, give you a criminal record. So that really does, again, dampen the mood.
Well, I think part of this, there's two contradictory, you know, pieces of advice. So, like, if we're giving people our own age or you know, people younger than us in college, like, seduction advice, I think there's, like, two oddly contradictory or two weird pieces of advice, or at least one of them is very weird. Because one of them is, like, this Lacey Green type of advice, which is, she has, like, you know, 2 million followers on YouTube. She's been popular for, like, a decade now. And, you know, so I took her as somewhat indicative, and I've heard her kind of line of thinking of, you know, like, if someone, you know, you can't consent if you're drunk. You also, it's not consent if, you know, it's an underage person. So that's the same as drunk. But underage is obvious. That's a legal
issue. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
But she ruins the underage thing by saying two people are at different life stages and it's a red flag. So the implication, she goes on to say, you know, so yes, if it's illegal, it's illegal. Just leave it alone. You know, but let's say it's like an 18-year-old and a 65-year-old. Like, either the 18-year-old woman has the capacity to make her own decision to sleep with the 65-year-old, or she doesn't. So either she is a free agent who's capable of thought and capable of making her own mistakes and her own decisions, or she's not. And is she at a different place in life than a 65-year-old? Duh. But that doesn't mean that, like, so this is the type of thing that I think is confusing a lot of times. It's like, you know, there's a lot of advice about that kind of thing that, you know, like there's formulas for when it comes to age.
Yeah.
Which I get to a large degree. Like, why would a 65-year-old want an 18-year-old? I mean, obviously just for sex.
Yeah.
But if you're two consenting adults, why is that not acceptable?
Well, I mean, it's legal. I don't think it's acceptable, personally. I don't think it's acceptable at all, but I think...
Oh, why not?
They are, I'd love to hear that. Well, I mean, if the bar for acceptability is legality, then yeah, I think it's acceptable in that sense, but I would never advise an 18-year-old, you know, girl that it's a good idea for her to sleep with a 65-year-old man.
Well, I didn't say it's a good idea. I said she has agency to choose, and she can make that choice.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So it's not like, but it's she, like Lacey Green is putting it on the same breath as it's rape, essentially, because he's so much older than her. So he's got, you know, in a different life stage. So is it creepy that Hugh Hefner is fucking these, or was fucking these 20-year-old playgirls?
Yeah.
Playboys? Yeah, I think it's a little creepy. If I was him, would I do it? Yeah, without a doubt. Are you out of your fucking mind? Like, that's the thing. It's like, okay, is it a little bit gross? Yeah, it's gross because he's wrinkly and he's on the way out. And, you know, it's gross. Obviously just about money. But I think, you know, when I look around at people who are having sex with each other, I'm like, that's not about, you know, any true deep values. Like, so many people, it's not about values really anyway. Right? Like when you see just a lot of people who are dating and having sex, it's like, you know, it's a symbol. Like that girl wants to date the cool college football player. That's the only reason. They don't like, she has, you know, she's an intellectual and he's a dumbass or something. Right? But he's got a six pack. All I'm saying is there's a lot of reasons why people sleep with each other.
Well, I guess the reason why it's just so disgusting in that case is because, you know, when the cheerleader hooks up with the jock, it's less obvious that there's, you know, maybe they're doing it for superficial reasons, but it's just so clearly, not based on anything that could be, maybe that there could be good reasons for an 18-year-old to fall in love with a 65-year-old.
She got his money, right?
Yeah.
Like if they got married, like what was that woman's name that was in the 90s? Anna something, I don't know. But like you know, like I don't think it's healthy psychologically. I'm not going to defend that kind of behavior, but I'm just saying you either have consent and you're a free agent as a human, like a free thinking agent, or you are not. It's one or the other.
Agreed. Yes. That's why I say, like, if we're talking about legality, yeah, I think it's acceptable, but I think it is important. Like, I think she's got a point in the sense if she were making this point, I don't think she was. So it's like, she obviously has the ability to give consent, but it is really creepy. It is disgusting. And it is kind of manipulative on, you know, the 65-year-old man's part, because he's lived for 65 years and she's only lived for 18. And even though she has the capacity to make choices, she knows a lot less than the 65-year-old who's probably just using for sex.
Okay, hold on. But why is that manipulative? Because this is a tricky slope here, a tricky thing. Because if we're not saying anything about him lying to her, so he's not saying, like, you know, I'll do XYZ for you or I'll do blah, blah, blah. You know, he's not saying in this scenario, he's just 65. So he could be coming up to her and being completely honest with her and say, you know, I'm 65 years old. You know, I think you're very hot. Obviously, I'm very wealthy. I can take you to Paris. Would you like to go to Paris with me? You know, I'm not saying you have to do anything, but if you're with me, there's a chance. I'm just letting you know, like, blah, blah, blah. I mean, or even if he says, like, you know, I'm 65, I'm wealthy, do you want to go to Paris with me? I mean, right then and there, you know, She does, and maybe when there's, you know, out in Paris, he wines her and dines her and takes her out to fancy places, and she finds herself seduced by him. Like,
yeah.
That, like, I don't see how that's been, and by whining, I mean both of them drinking, let's be clear, not just her.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, this term manipulation is where the issue I have comes into play. Because manipulation to me implies like a fraudulent, like a lie. Like saying, right. You know, I'm 35. Why do you look 65? Well, you know, I had a cancer for a little bit and it made me age. Oh, okay.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, he uses pity and then he's, you know, he gets her to sleep with her. Or he says, yeah, I can get you into the film business, baby. Or like there was this guy that was, you know, tricking women and he went to jail for this. This is manipulation. This is fraud. Is he was like tricking these women into saying, you know, into sleeping with him by pretending he had a casting couch for porn. So he'd bring these women in like as though he could get them a job in porn. And he would say, you know, you just have to have sex with me now. And some of them did
it.
God. Some of them didn't. Some of them did. That is clear manipulation.
Fraud. That's fraud. I guess, what is fraud and manipulation, I guess?
Manipulation to me has to have a lie. Like, you have to lie. So, like, if I'm trying to sell you something and I misconstrue the facts, that's manipulation to me. That's like the definition of what manipulation means if you look it up. And
I am going to look it up.
And if you just have like manipulation, because here's the thing. I'm in the persuasion game. I'm the sales marketing person. So it's my job to persuade you, Amy, to go from a no to buying my product to a yes. Everyone starts off as a no, right? So if manipulation is simply giving you the facts in and spinning a beautiful story that convinces you, then everything I do is manipulation. Like that's my whole role is to like cater, like to craft a story that sells you on buying this thing. And, you know, whether it's our services for like video production or knives, like I used to sell knives and, you know, we would say like it has a forever guarantee. Well, that's true. It does have a forever guarantee. You do have to send it in and we make, you know, I tell you that you have to, it's not like the knife will last forever, like literally a million years. It's, you know, degrades like anything else, but we have a guarantee that if you send it in, we'll give you a new one and we'll sharpen it for free. Like, so the point is that to some people that is manipulation and that's where I have a problem with it. It's not
manipulation. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. It's a persuasion. That's persuading and presenting, you know, something in the best light possible, but yeah, I didn't think about it that way. I guess like manipulation, when I think about it, is more like they're disingenuous with their intentions, and they say things maybe without lying, but they try to imply things in order to get you to do what they want. What, so,
do you have an example?
Okay, so like let's say. The guy, the 65-year-old man, does have a way to get her into the movie industry, and she knows that, and she wants to do that. He could manipulate her by, maybe telling her lots of stories of, you know, success with other girls he's helped. Like, oh yeah, I've helped lots of young women get into the industry and become stars, and blah blah blah. He's not promising or anything, but maybe he doesn't, intend to do that for her. And his real intention is to sleep with her. That's his real intention. So he's just changing his language and he's not doing it in a way that's outright, you know, a lie or being dishonest, but he's manipulating her into like getting her starstruck and like maybe taking her out to fancy places and telling her that she could be a star. When he really couldn't care less and just wants to sleep with her. That to me is a manipulation.
But what if he makes her a star?
Sorry?
What if he makes her a star?
Well, then that's different. Then he had the intention of doing that. So that's different.
Yeah, but what if his intention, So I think it's very dangerous to go down the what's his intention route, because that's hard to assess. It's, you know, right. psychoanalyzing people after the fact. But what if his intention was to sleep with her, but he said, hey, I will make you a star if you sleep with me, and she sleeps with him, and he makes her a star. But his intention was just to have sex with her. He just used his abilities to have sex. Like, how is that manipulation? That's what I'm saying. Right. It's, like, dangerous. So, like, we go down this road of, you know, I looked up manipulate, by the way, and it's all it says, it's very, very vague. It's like handle or control, typically in a skillful manner.
Yeah, that's what I see here too. Yep.
I think that's still, like, I don't even like that definition. I think that definition is ludicrous.
I don't. Like, I'm not really satisfied with that either. Because, like, what's the difference between that and persuasion? And what's the difference between manipulate and, like, defrauding people and, like, lying? Because, you know, I think there's a little cloudy there.
Yeah, like, here's the second definition of manipulate is control or influence a person, such cleverly, unfairly, or unscrupulously. And that I can dig, actually. So you're controlling or influencing somebody unfairly, or specifically, I think, unscrupulously. I think the cleverly is kind of bullshit. Like, what do you mean cleverly? Like, that's I don't know. That we could get into that, like, a word play here. But the idea of influencing unscrupulously, that's what I mean. And unscrupulously, in my book, is essentially by fabricating the facts. Like, there's a difference between telling us, like, crafting a story and using the facts and such. Because the truth of the matter is that everything we say to each other is a story. Like, we're choosing and selecting certain facts and not others based on what we believe is important. Yep. Like, you can't include every single fact that has ever existed, you know, about any subject you're talking about. But, I mean, like, it's unscrupulous. So here's my example of this, of manipulation versus persuasion. So I once sold my parents' 1997 Buick Regal, which had 140,000 miles on it. It had a blue book value of like $3,000 or something. And I sold it for like $5,000. I sold it for a couple thousand dollars more than the blue book value. Right?
Oh, wow.
And I did it by using just general psychology of persuasion tactics. Now, to set this up, I think it's important to understand a couple things. Like, one, like, the value we create, like, what is the value of something? So, for instance, if I said that, let's say this was true. Like, let's say I had the car, the 1993 Buick that Robert Downey Jr. was caught having sex with that hooker in 93, right? And I said, so the car's blue book value is $1,000, but because of what happened in that car, I'm going to sell it for $50,000. And someone buys it. And I tell them nothing. I don't lie anything about it. I'm not saying, you know, I say, like, here's the, you know, look at the engine, look at the exhaust, look at the tires, look at the interior, the exterior. All I'm saying is that there's this current thing that occurred in it, and now it's all of a sudden $50,000. Is that manipulation?
Right. No.
No, that's what value is all about. And part of it is crafting a story. Now, if I just made that shit up and it wasn't that car, and I'm saying it is, that's fraud. That's manipulation.
That's to me, that's the fraud.
Same thing. But I think they're the same. Like, I think fraud is under
the manipulation.
Like, fraud is a type of manipulation. It's a genus of it. That's how I think of it as, right? And persuasion would be, you know, to use tactics. For instance, one of the things I did was I, you know, posted it online. I obviously washed it up, so it was nice and clean. But I had like an engineer or a mechanic look it over, and I had a report of all the things that were wrong with it and all the things that had happened over the years. So I had all of that laid out in facts for people. And one of the biggest things I did was I scheduled all of the people that were going to come see it within 5 minutes of each other. So what ended up happening was kind of a battle to get it. Cause that's a basic sales tactic. Like, I'll have, you know, this one guy came at 12, another guy came at 12:10, 12:15, 12:20. So there were like four or five people. And what ended up happening was there's this one guy who was a fucking asshole about it. And he drove it around. He tested it out. Like, he spun it around to make sure it was all working right, because he was going to buy it. He was a mechanic himself. He looked under the hood, and there's three other people looking there. And he's like, okay, I'll give you $3,000. And I was like, well, this guy offered like $3,700. And he was like, well, I'm not going to pay anymore. I was like, okay, I'm not going to like not sell it for $3,700. Like, that doesn't make sense. And then,
yeah.
And then another guy was like, well, I'll pay $4,000 for it. And then basically by the end of it, it was like $5,000. Like, you know. And then the guy who bought it felt better about it because he upped that asshole, essentially. He's like, that felt really good, man. I was like, that guy was a dick. And I was like, yeah, he was a dick. And so, you know, what I'm saying is, did I manipulate them? Like, I told all the facts were laid out. They, their own psychology of, you know, wanting to win is what pushed them to pay, you know, a little bit more than the blue book value.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, that's a good story, and that's a good point. And it kind of reminds me, it's reminiscent of this whole like, oh, that's rapey, or oh, that's racist. It's like this definition creep that's happening.
Yeah.
You're right, because that's just persuasion. That's just being smart and making sure you're maximizing the value of your car, not by being dishonest, but by setting up the situation in a way that's going to highlight all of the great things about the car and the fact that it's in demand. And that's not a lie. It's in demand. You made sure that people were aware of that, and that, you know, helped you get the maximum value out of that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it is true that I think a lot of people would look at what you did and say, you know, and say that you manipulated those people, but I don't think that would be fair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was like unscrupulous is the important word to me. And scrupulous to me means a presentation of the facts. Like, mm-hmm. the facts are there. If someone asked me a question, you know, like, there was no question for them to ask, but they said, is there any other, you know, like, are there any other things like accidents it's been in? I was like, there's an accident report. Yes, it's been in an accident. Like, I wasn't hiding things like that. Like, that to me is where it becomes manipulation, where it becomes, you know, trickery, basically.
Right.
Now, is there a fine line? Yeah, I think sometimes people can, you know, overblow a case, you know, like paint such a big, grandiose picture of something. And leave out fact and in such a way that a person doesn't ask questions, because, you know, it seems like they've answered everything, right?
Right, but maybe they're intentionally leaving facts out that they should know.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to remember this story. It's another car. Like, basically, car sales is such a perfect example, but all sales is so indicative of this, because if what they're saying about this guy, you know, pressuring the woman and Baby It's Cold Outside is rapey, which basically means not consensual, which means, you know, manipulative, you know, control tactics, whatever, then all sales to a large degree up until recently is rapey in its own context. Like, it's manipulative and things of that nature, because like pressure tactics is a general tactic that all salespeople take, like, or most mediocre salespeople take that tactic. Is it effective? The most effective? Yeah, actually, but it's not the best way to do it. I mean, obviously it's effective or people wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Like when you know, if you've ever walked down a mall and they try to, like, those guys or girls try to get you to buy perfume, right? Or buy makeup or, you know, that sea salt bullshit, right? Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, and they got me to do that once when I was younger, because, you know, it was a hot girl and she used her sex totally to get me to come over to her. And she's like, oh, you have such beautiful skin. I love your olive skin. And she touched me a lot. I was like, you know, I'm 18 years old and, you know, I'm not afraid to say I was a virgin at this point. I was like, oh my gosh, this girl's fucking hot. I can't believe it. And she was like, your girlfriend would love that. I don't have a girlfriend. Oh, you got to have a girlfriend. And I was like, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, all right, we'll find you, girl. Don't worry. And I was like, I don't know why she's Asian in my, you know, I don't know why I have an Asian accent. She was not Asian. I think she was Israeli. But anyway, you know, I was like, And it's just by the end of it, I was like, I spent $65 on sea salt and I threw it away the next day or something. Like, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to get sea salt stuff. But that's like, you know, but she pressured me, and people pressure all the time, men and women. It's part of, you know, that's a sales tactic.
Would you say she was unscrupulous?
No, I don't think in that case, like, no. I don't believe so at all.
Okay.
Like,
so what would you describe what she did as? Just like she was persuasive, she pressured you.
She was very pressuring. Yeah, like I don't think she was actually attracted to me. And she never said like, I will bang you, right? She never said anything like that. She said you had nice skin. I think I do actually have kind of nice skin, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like I think my skin's not bad, you know, Mediterranean or whatever. And my, you know, it's a nice olive colored or whatever. I don't know. Like I seem to have decent skin. I've heard it from other people. So I don't know. But I think my point is she was pressuring me. She got really close. She, you know, used touch. Personally, I don't think those things are terrible. In our culture, they are. I mean, what would be terrible if she, you know, or if it was a guy doing it to a girl and there was like they were in a dark alleyway and there's no way out for the girl. That would be different.
Yes, that's different.
But this is a mall. So even if it's a guy to a girl, the girl could just like walk away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the, I just think these things get so conflated and ludicrous, like to the point of ludicrous.
Yeah. Like, I don't think what she did was like, I mean, she did kind of, she did her job. She sold something to you and I don't think you really found it valuable. You threw it out the next day. That's on the border for me. I know it's not like manipulation, but like, I wouldn't call her a good salesperson. I don't know. Or maybe. Or what do you think?
Well, I mean, from a pure sales standpoint, I don't think that. I think it is a tactic that's very effective for low-level sales. So when you're selling small products, you only have a couple seconds. So often, yes, pressure tactics is the best way to actually accomplish your task. Now, what you're saying is the value to the person. Well, I'm sorry, but this is what it means to be a free agent in the world. Make up, like, fucking man up, woman up, and stop buying stuff that you don't want. Right? Like, that's ludicrous. Like, the idea that we're going to blame the salesperson, it's not the salesperson's job to assess your psychological ability to say no and what value you're going to get out of it. Their job is to move the product and to educate people without lying about it. That's it. So it's like, I'm going to educate you. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to persuade you to buy this product. You as a free agent in a free market need to fucking man up and say no. Like that's a good point. It's so ludicrous that we're getting to this idea. Like, oh my God, it's so crazy to me.
You're right. No, you're right. Because what happened is you just had to get – you probably learned after that, like, I need to grow a backbone even against, like, really hot women and learn how to say no, and that's going to make you more powerful in the world. And it, you know, probably did, because you probably felt ashamed that you did that for a while and resolved that, you know, you're not going to waste your money on stupid shit like that again.
Yes.
And that's a lot better than protecting you from the evil sales women out there and making you live in fear and persecuting people who are just trying to do their job.
Well, yeah. And putting this back to men and women, like, men persuade women to have sex with them. That's what men do. That's part of their role in the sexual, you know, relationship. I think women are trying, or not women, not all women. I think feminists are trying to ruin this and trying to deny the reality of that sexual relationship.
And the responsibility of the women to learn how to say no and act on it and be, you know, adults. Choosers.
Like, be an adult. Like, be an adult and know how to get yourself out of situations that you don't want to be in.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
That's part of being an adult. The only time it crosses the boundary, obviously, is when there's true fraud or control. So, you know, in the song, for instance, one of the power, like the things that they always bring up is the line where it says, but maybe just a half a drink more. She says, but maybe just a half a drink more. Put some records on while I pour. So, you know, notice how the guy, he's been persuading her the whole time. And then he all of a sudden like jumps on this opportunity to keep her there, which is good. You know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And she says the neighbors might think maybe it's bad out there. So he's like, again, trying to persuade her to stay. Say, what's in this drink? So at this point, he's given her the drink. And then he says, and yeah. then he says, no cabs to be out there, had out there. And this is like the line that everyone picks on. And that here's the, in Vox, the quote unquote rapey interpretation.
Okay.
All caps. What's in this drink? That's what they said. And then they go on and they go on and they say, and no cabs, no way for her to get home. This is awful. She's trapped and he knows it. And he's basically gloating about it. Plus, beautiful witsy hurry just sounds really creepy and predatory. That's what they said. That's their literal quote. Just sounds creepy and predatory because he said, beautiful, what's your hurry? Like,
yeah. You know, I mean, if you looked at it in the worst possible way, yes, this song, it could be a creepy situation, but it's not rapey. I think they really destroy any kind of credibility by saying it's rapey. You could say it's kind of creepy what he's doing, but you know, saying things like, hey beautiful, what's your hurry, those, that's not predatory, and this is not him trapping her. He's just trying to persuade her. He's not exactly super sophisticated about it, but
I don't think most guys are very sophisticated about trying to have sex. Like, yeah, I don't think there's that many super sophisticated James Bond type characters who are wife fuckers, by the way. But I don't think there's that many guys who are super sophisticated about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I've never, you know, I'm not that versed in sleeping.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, you know, just, it's, what do you expect? You know, it's just, this is, that's what guys are, well, you know, I don't think you can be so harsh on, I think it's quite an innocent, he's just trying to get laid, you know?
Have you ever had a creepy, okay, let me ask you this. Have you had a creepy situation with a guy that you ended up hooking up with? Can I ask you that?
No.
Never?
No.
So there's never been a time when a guy was like pressuring you like this guy did, and you ended up hooking up with that guy.
Well, I've been pressured, absolutely. And then when you start getting that kind of creepy pressure, you just leave. You just fucking leave. That's what you have to do. So, you know.
Yeah.
If I was attracted to the person and really felt a connection and thought that, you know, something could happen with this person, you know, beyond just hooking up, then obviously you'd entertain the idea of staying. But if you get this feeling of like they're just pressuring you and you don't really like them, well, you know, you have the option to leave, and you know, that's what you do, and that's what I've done. And I never got, you know, no one tried to rape me. They've tried to pressure me, but I'm not into this, you know, I've got to go. And then you actually leave. You don't hang around and say, have to drink more.
I think she's clearly into this guy.
Exactly.
And obviously in the story, she's into him. But I'm trying to get into like more real world situations. So you said a couple of interesting things. Mm-hmm. You know, one, you have the ability to say no and walk away. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, good for you. And I think that's, you know, what we're talking about here. And I think in most normal human beings, that's true, right?
Yeah.
You know, it might get tricky when the girl is 18 and she feels social pressure to stay and have sex with him because he's the popular kid. But
yeah,
that seemed to be the second part of what you were saying, although, you know, for children, right? The second part of what you said, or the second way, was you might entertain it. I'm picking on this. I mean, you're an attractive woman, so we're picking on this a little bit. I think it's important for people to hear that perspective. So you're entertaining it, the idea. By it, we're talking about hooking up, having sex. If there's a if you think there might be a possibility for something else, like so in other words, the guy might be a little bit creepy right now, but you're saying, you know what, I kind of like him. I don't like that he's pressuring me right now, but I do like him. I think he's a good person. Maybe he's just really horny or something. And I am, you know, like obviously the assumption is that you are attracted enough to like go home with him, which should be a consideration before you do anything, right? And then you get to a point where you say, like, in, you know, and I'm just, you know, setting this up, and you confirm or go into this more. But then if you're saying to yourself, you know what, I think I like him, maybe I'll sleep with him, even though he's a little bit creepy right now. Is that true?
You know, I don't think I would do that, but...
Okay, correct me. Go for it.
It's because, I don't think it's a good idea to entangle yourself with someone that, if you think he's creepy in any way, but you maybe I do like him, you know, there's something about this person that I do want to learn more about, but right now they're drunk and they just want to sleep with me and I just don't feel the same way. I don't want to turn him down completely because, you know, I think he's maybe just too drunk. I would probably, you know, maybe make out or do something to show him that I am interested in you. I don't want to do, to do that with you right now. I'm not comfortable with that. And then you just leave.
But what if he's pressuring you? He's pressuring you, Amy. He's trying to convince you.
No,
he's saying, stay. You got to stay. Or what if he says baby, don't you like me? Do you want to have sex? Come on, baby. I thought you liked me. Don't you like me?
Oh my God. it always depends on how do you feel about the person? If I felt they were acting weird, but I didn't want to write them off completely, I probably wouldn't sleep with them, but I would tell them I'd see them later and then leave.
What about when you were 19?
Well, when I was younger, I would definitely have, been more naive and I would have been I guess this is the way people have sex. And then maybe I would have done it, but, I'm not like that now. I think it's really important that you have a really good connection with someone before you do something like that. So I don't know, I guess my opinion is probably different than that of an early 20s me, but, I don't think I would do that today. No.
Okay, so maybe what some of these feminists are trying to do is protect these 19-year-old girls who are naive, and they would say yes, and they would give in to social pressure.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. Well,
okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's true. Obviously, you need a legal age of consent. You need to have a cutoff time for, when someone has has to be given as their responsibility, that they can make their own choices and they're responsible for the consequences of those decisions. But you have to acknowledge that we picked an age, but it doesn't discount from the fact that you're still going to be an 18-year-old girl and you're not going to know anything and you're going to be vulnerable and you're going to be naive and people are going to be able to fool you. And it's hard not to, in defense of maybe the better feminists that just genuinely have a concern for girls in that situation who just don't know that much yet and they want to protect them. But the thing is that you can't protect them from the responsibility of choice and learning how to defend yourself and be independent and hone the ability to judge and make good decisions for yourself. And I think that's probably what's, kind of happened and has gone out of control. I think that's a good point. I don't think the motivations of these people are purely just about man hating. I think there's definitely there's probably a lot of really concerned and legitimate concerns about how, young women are vulnerable to being pressured and are susceptible to pressure. But that doesn't mean that you can't protect them from that forever. They have to grow up and learn, and you're really doing them a disservice by saying that they're not capable. So,
well, let's dig into this a bit real quick. Is that okay? Let me ask you a couple questions here. So,
okay.
I think there's a lot of implications what you said that are really important that we all get to. You know, the impetus of the show is that we're not academics. You and I are just normal, everyday people trying to navigate the sexual landscape of 2017, right? You're in a relationship, but you and I have talked for a long time about, you know, dating and like this kind of like ideas of what's going on and how to, you know, seduce properly and how to give consent. Like those sorts of things are just things that we do talk about in a modern era, I think, amongst friends. So,
yeah.
But I wanted to dig into this a little bit because you're saying, you know, the feminists are looking out for these young girls and being pressured. I mean,
that's the most positive light you could put them in. Yes.
Well, so I think there's an implication that needs to be teased out here, though. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. What do you think should be the legal age to have consensual sex?
Oh, well, I don't have a problem with what it is now, which is like, what is it, like?
It's 18.
18? Yeah.
But 2 16-year-olds can legally have sex, as far as I understand. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's illegal. I imagine it may be different in certain areas. So I don't want to, you know, don't take that to the bank if you're a 16-year-old listening to this. But what I would But I think in general, like if a 16-year-old has sex with a 15-year-old, it's okay. I think even like if an 18-year-old has sex with like a 17-year-old, like there's a weird like year rule or something like that, where if it's within a year, in general, it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. And I think that's fair.
So, because, you know, consent legal age-wise is state by state, country by country that you have to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's say we're going to have a universal, you know, or American, you know, North American law for all Canada and North America for this.
Yeah.
Because what we're talking about when you're 18 is that you're legally able to consent to anybody, including that 65-year-old, you know, dude.
Yeah.
Right? That's the age that it's legal, you know, to do whatever you want, essentially.
Yeah.
Consensual.
Yeah.
So you think 18 is a good time, even though our brains don't form until 25 completely. Like, we know that that's a fact of, you know, our neurology, is that our neocortex, which is our complete decision-making part of our brain, doesn't fully form until we're 25. So shouldn't you have 25 be the age?
Well, I'm open to that. I'm not dead set on 18. If there can be, I mean, you can make a case for 25. That sounds plausible. I mean, the whole point is that, you know, the legal age of consent is that they have the full capacity to bear the consequence of their own decision. Now, you know, does that mean that they need to necessarily have a fully matured brain to its completion, and that would be the age of 25? I don't know if that's 100% necessary.
So what are the consequences? I don't know. This is what I think needs to be teased out.
Okay, because, what do you mean consequences?
Let's say a 25-year-old seduces an 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he pressures her in a way that most feminists don't like. Because what we're talking about is feminists protecting these 18-year-olds, and you're saying that that's the good intention. Just to be clear, any good intentions amongst any of these feminists that I've seen at all. Like, I think they don't understand their own intentions. I don't think they understand what motivates them at all. Like, even, like, everyday, you know, like a normal friend of mine who's a feminist, I talk to her, she seems to have no conception of what motivates this. And I think there's something very destructive underlying this. Because,
you know,
what are we protecting women from? Like, what are we, when I'm going to protect, you know, if I had a daughter, if I'm going to protect her from getting like shot, that to me, like, okay, so don't go to these neighborhoods where you might get shot in the face. Okay. I'm going to protect you from that. Or rape, where it's literal rape, where it's force implied. That's protection. But what are we protecting an 18-year-old from? Protect, mm-hmm. like that word protect. Like, mm-hmm. what are we protecting her from?
You have a really good point. You're making a really good point. I mean, the way to, quote, protect people is to educate them, because ultimately they can't, you know, you tell your daughter, like, don't go to these neighborhoods. You might get shot in the face. you know, you can't protect her in the manner where you get to go to these neighborhoods and then forcibly remove people or like, I don't know, take away their firearms, or I don't know, whatever way in which you think you can make it safer. You don't have the right to do that because they have their own rights too. So I think the tactic kind of reveals what their real motivation is, because I'm probably being overly charitable, because I think, I mean, commonly the tactic that I see amongst feminists is they're going for a power play. They want.
Well, that's definitely true. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're destroying lives, like literally destroying lives.
Yeah. They're not actually interested in making a woman stronger. They're interested in weakening other people and tearing them down. I think the results of that really kind of show their motivation, because if you want to protect someone, you tell them, you educate them, you say, don't go there. Make sure you say no. And make sure, you do this and that, and this is why, and you explain things to them and you arm them with knowledge so that they can, truly be independent and protect themselves. But the way that they have kind of gone about it is they want to change other people. And they want to, they want the power to do so. So, I think that there are some, I don't think all feminists are hardcore feminists the way that, the ones that we see in the media are. I think there are probably some like really young and naive people who just think of feminism as, as like pro women in the sense that they want to like protect women, but they probably have a very shallow understanding and not a lot of involvement in what's actually happening legally and in the culture. So I agree with you. Like most of them are probably just
I think that's okay. Hold on. But I think that's one aspect of what I'm saying. The literally that you want to educate them, but there's another element. I'm like, personally, I'm always interested in what motivates someone. What are the reasons for them to advocate this? And this is true of intellectuals, but it's also true of the person on the street that accepts a lot of these ideas, whether they realize the implications or not. So In this case, yes, like one aspect of what I said, you're right, is, educate the person, but what I'm trying to stress is when we say we're protecting them, like you focus on the protection part. And when I talked about like shooting people in the face and what, one way to protect is to educate. And like, if we're looking at, but the question is not the protect part. The question is, what is the evil thing we are protecting them from? Like what evil demon is killing them that we're implying in all of this? What is the evil demon?
In feminism?
No, okay, so let's step it back for a second. So in the instance of a feminist, like a 40-year-old feminist intellectual that goes around and says, we need to protect women who are going to be manipulated, they're going to be tricked, they're going to be pressured, they're raised in this area, in this ideology that men are more right than they are, so they don't have as much control, they don't have the consent, they don't have... What is the boogeyman that they're trying to shroud them from? What is this evil thing that they're protecting from?
Good point. I don't know.
Sex.
Yeah.
No, it's sex. It's very clearly sex. They are
really?
Yes, they're implying that sex is evil. Like if you're 18 years old and you have sex with a 30-year-old, that's good. Sex is good. Like it shouldn't be this evil thing. Like I'm not saying there are no consequences, but sex is good. Like good for you. You're 18. You had sex with a 30-year-old rather than an 18-year-old. That probably means that the 30-year-old is better and you had better sex. Like it's so bizarre to me that no one's talking about this. Like why is sex so fucking evil? Like it's gonna kill you to have, like obviously if a guy punches you in the head and rapes you over a car, that's bad. But if he pressures you and you have sex, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, it's only the end of the world if you, like, catch an STD or something like that, which, yes, you should have education around this. But we have, like, this underlying view in our culture. And this is why I wanted to have this poem that I brought up, The Garden of Love. Because I think that's the purpose of The Garden of Love, right? Like, in The Garden of Love, he goes to this Garden of Love, which is a metaphor for sex. Like a garden of love is sex, right? Blooming of your love is sex, right? And he saw what he didn't see. A chapel was built in the midst where I used to play in the green. So he's saying where I used to have fun, where I used to fuck, right? Like I used to have fun here. Now there's a chapel, which what does a chapel represent? Right? A chapel represents, well, not just the church. What does a church represent? It's like, thou shalt not. That's the next line. It's like the things you can and cannot do. It's the things that stand in the way of sexual pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. And he says like, and the gates of the chapel were shut, and thou shalt not writ over the door. So I turned to the garden of love that so many sweet flowers bore. And I saw it was filled with graves and tombstones where flowers should be. And priests in black gowns were walking their rounds and binding with briars my joys and desires. Like, that is what I'm talking about. Like, sex is good, and we're making it this evil thing. We're making it like we have to, oh, these girls, she had sex because the guy, okay, great, she had sex. Like, okay, that is a, like, she experienced a sexual thing. That's a good thing. We should first of all hold up sex as like this extremely positive, amazing thing that humans do. That's the first thing. And then we can say, okay, yeah, there's some bad things you got to watch out for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like don't get pregnant, watch STDs, don't, you know, but first off, I think those are way more overemphasized than they need to be. Like, I'm not saying STDs aren't important, but like we're basically acting like dudes have this fucking shotgun between their pants that blows up the woman's face and she dies. Like, it's sex. Like, it's sex. Sex is good. Isn't it? Isn't sex good?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for that. But, you know, okay, you know what? I 100%
give me the woman first.
Sex is a good thing. It's a good, it's obviously, it's a manifestation of romance, hopefully. But I think you don't want to, like, I don't think that it's a good idea to just, like, you should be careful with sex. You should be careful. It doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It doesn't mean that it's evil. It doesn't mean anything negative. In fact, I think it means something, you know, that it's actually
quite... What is implied when you say protect?
It's an important thing. It's important. And you shouldn't, in my opinion, I don't think, you know, I think you should be careful about it because there's STDs and you name, basically STD as a risk, but there's an emotional risk too, because people get, there are reasons why, you know.
So then get broken. Okay. That's okay. That sex itself is good though, is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with sex. I think.
But do you not hear the implication in all of this is what I'm trying to say. Do you not hear it? When you say protect, like the word protect means something. It means that there is an evil villain out there. That's the implication. Like, words have meaning and power.
Yeah.
And when you say, like, feminists are protecting young women, do you...
I'm not... I wasn't... Okay, like, okay, first, I want to make sure... I'm not defending feminists. I'm just trying... I was trying to think of them in maybe the most, what would be the forgiving way, but... I do agree with you. Like, I don't think that's really what they're after, but maybe some people have been bamboozled into thinking that is what they're doing. And I think that there is something to protect, and that doesn't mean that there's an evildoer in this situation. No, I think there is a legitimate reason to protect, you know, sexual relations because it's important, and it's not something that should be done willy-nilly, not because it's evil, but because it's important, and you should be mindful of
people. How do you figure that out? If it's important, how do you figure that out if everyone's implying that it's evil thing that is going to destroy your life?
Well, I don't think that's a good thing that it should be implied that way. It should.
Okay,
it
so here's the alternative. Okay. Here's the alternative. The alternative is, hey, kids, there's STDs, there's pregnancy, but go forth out in the world and fuck as much as possible. like be a, go in and bacchanal, like Roman times, like enjoy your bodies, explore your bodies, have as much sex as possible, be safe. But if you like a guy and you know, because how else do you discover what these things, that, like the importance of something like this is? How do you figure it out?
Yeah.
Like if everyone's telling you what it is, because I So tell me, answer for me, Amy, please. As a female perspective, help me out here.
Okay. Is there a question? Or are you?
Yeah, how many? Tell me if it's such.
Because
I'm advocating for a fuck fest. Like, I want people to have more sex. Be smart about it, yes. But I don't want to. I hate that we are implying on such a mass scale that sex has any like. It's we should like it's in the realm of hell, dirt. We have terms like dirty and gross. Like, why not bring back the ancient times a little bit, where sex is like this part, this exploration of your body, this enjoyment. Yes, values, great, but you discover values through experience, don't you? Like, you have to try it with this guy and that guy. And if everyone's telling you, like, implying with the scary boogeyman, like, that seems like such a horrible existence.
Well, yeah, you're right. Like, you can't know without some experience. And I'm not saying, like, oh my God, be a virgin until you are in love. That's not what I would advocate. I guess it's just like I just take a little more of a conservative approach, but that doesn't mean that sex is evil and that you shouldn't engage in it. But I think you should treat it for, you know, it is a serious thing. It's not, it is fun, obviously, if you can get to a place where you're that comfortable with a person, and you can be uninhibited, but I think you should be careful. That's all, because you can get hurt out there too.
But why? Why should you be, like, when you're saying be careful, you're not saying with STDs or pregnancies, correct?
I'm talking about emotional hurt, because there are a lot of things that happen when you get intimate with someone. You become vulnerable, right? And there are a lot of chemicals that go off in your brain. You become bonded to a person. And I don't think there are reasons why people are careful about that, because that is a bond that's typically reserved for a certain kind of relationship. And I don't think that's unwise. I'm not saying you should never engage in, like, uncommitted sex. If that's what you want to do, then, you know, power to you. But I think if you're a woman who's looking for, something, maybe you're ready for it. Okay. Cause not every woman is. If a woman is ready for a long-term relationship, I think she probably doesn't want to have a fuck fest, because, it's just not conducive for her emotional world. In my opinion, like, I don't think that's going to be good for her emotionally if she's just having sex with any guy she thinks is attractive. I think it does need to be based on values. And there's a period in your life, maybe, when you don't really know what your values are and you're experimenting, and therefore you're a lot more lenient about what kind of standards you set for sexual partners. But I don't think it's unwise to just, you know, throw a little caution in there that, like, if you do plan on wanting to have a long-term relationship in the future, then, you know, you should maybe start to think about what those things are, what's important to you, and then choose a partner accordingly. So that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that sex is bad. I'm not defending feminism. I'm just saying that that there's a reason why the word protect comes into play, because I think it protects the long-term interests of a girl who wants a long-term relationship.
Well, hold on, though. I don't think that's fair, because I think you're assuming a lot of stuff. And we're talking about, like, because the example I said is, like, you know, consent, like 18, like consensual kids, like kids that are able to consent. I said, go forth and fuck, right? And you're saying, now you're bringing in all this, you know, this long-term nonsense, right? Which, okay, if you're older and that's what you want, or if you're 18 and if that's what you want, yes, I agree. It can be difficult to get a long-term relationship if you're fucking everybody in town. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, to be clear, I'm not really advocating that. What I'm trying to advocate for is a sexual liberation of man and woman to enjoy sex, and for people of all ages to spread the idea that sex is good, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fundamental, that's the starting point of sex, is that you know, if you're going to look at any negative aspects of sex, the first thing to acknowledge is that it's the greatest experience in human existence. And so you should, like, you should, like you're saying, I agree with the idea that you need to be rational about the kind of, you know, and kind of think about the values that you want. But when you're 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, like, you don't know a lot of times, right? So,
no.
But if all you're saying, because what you were just talking about was like, well, if you don't want to damage a person's long-term interests or long-term desires, that's great. But you're assuming your own values of your, you know, desires right now of wanting long-term values. I'm trying to say, like, what are practical bits of, you know, advice given the, you know, like a broad perspective that a person, any person should have, but especially like a young person. And first off, you should approach everything in life rationally by thinking about what are your values. You know, one way that I liked how Jordan Peterson thinks about it is like, what is your heaven and what is your hell on earth, right? Like your hell could be, you know, overeating when you're sad and like not exercising when things aren't going your way or not exercising at all or being lazy. Yeah. And like there's these types of things and how they manifest themselves in your life. And he asks a good question, like, if you were to continue in this like habit for 3 years, what would you look like, right? What would your life look like? And the heaven is the opposite of that. But the problem is when you're 18 to 25, 18 to 23, you don't really know. Like, so then the question becomes, what kind of perspective on this subject, sex, should an 18-year-old girl have? And when you're listening to like the Lacey Greens, when you're listening to all these feminists out there, or like your friends who are, you know, maybe your fat, ugly friend who can't get laid anyway, when you're listening to their perspective so much, you're saying like, you know, and the language they're using, I mean, the point of this podcast is language is powerful. And when we're implying to these kids all through their lives that sex is bad, men are rapists, you don't want to get raped, that this song that you and your family were singing when you were 6 years old is rapey, that sex is dirty, gross, you know, you're capitulating to man, don't give in to give away your power to man. Like all the implications of all of these words that are used is that sex equals hell. It is bad. It is negative. It is gross. All I'm saying is that is the first thing that needs to be reversed.
I think that's true. I think everything you just said there, agree. Like it is being painted as just evil, bad thing that all it's going to do is ruin your life. You know, yes, that should be reversed. And I just, you know, maybe it sounds like I'm mostly in agreement with you. The only place I would differ is that, like, I don't advocate for a fuck fest. That's all. I just think that.
Why not? When you're 18, 19, why not?
You should go and explore. Yes. But
that's what a fuck fest. That's what I mean by that's what I mean by fuck fest is explore. Because what does explore mean? It means if you have an inclination and you desire some guy, we're talking about a girl, then you know, make it clear and have sex with them. It's okay. It's okay. Be smart about it, but have sex with them. And then if you don't like the situation, then get out of it. Right? Like this, we're painting this picture of the world and men as like this horrible thing that rapes everybody.
It's not. I don't think that my point of view does say that. So
I don't think your point of view says that either. No, I don't think you're saying that. I think there's an implication in the way you're saying it of what I'm saying.
I don't understand how. All I'm saying is that you need to discover what you like. I'm not saying you shouldn't sleep with anyone. I'm saying be mindful about and help, you know, and develop what it is that you actually want in a person, and know that there are emotional, you're gonna get your heart broken, and that's the fact. You're gonna get your heart broken, and it's gonna happen over and over and over again, and then hopefully
more
at the
guys
end,
than girls, but yeah.
Or you know, or maybe you'll fall in love and it'll be the right guy, and then that's it, then you're done, right? But I've also seen this happen where people are trapped perpetually in uncommitted relationships, and they're never really satisfied, and they think that you know, sex is a gateway to a relationship, but I think,
well, that's, I think
you,
separate,
you just have to be careful. You got to be careful because I've seen, okay, you know, I don't, you know, I don't have a, I should probably think about this more because I don't really have a full answer, but I have seen cases of men and women who all they seem to get are short-term relationships where they're having sex with lots of different people, but they never get what they
truly want. Sounds pretty awesome to me.
Yeah.
Playa. What's wrong with that? Playa. Go for it. Okay, so in all truth and fullness, yes, I think there can be a danger to that if you're not careful. Like if you're just a you know, a serial, you know, having sexer. You know, if you're, like if you're using sex as escapism, if you're, but what I'm trying to get at is like we live in this era where sex advice or all kinds of advice, like it's the ultimate era of random bits of advice from all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's contradictory. Like in the past, the only advice you got was from the church. Like 200 years ago, there was, you know, sex advice that came on high from the church, and this is what you had to do, what you didn't have to do. If you did these things, you're ostracized, and you're blah, 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 you're executed, blah. Like we live now in a unique era where we are now starting to become capable, or it's becoming necessary to guide ourselves. So, and to help guide the next generation. So what I'm hearing and what I see a lot of is a lot of people who have a certain, you know, maybe a little bit of an older person perspective trying to infringe their views in a very vague, broad way that's confusing, that doesn't make sense to an 18-year-old. And it's not just you, it's like a lot of people. So, you know, it's because I have to say, I do think a little bit of this is in what you're saying. Now, I understand what your intentions are good, but try to, like, as an 18-year-old, how does an 18-year-old even comprehend the idea of long-term and being in these, you know, really, if they're only 18, they've never been in a long-term relationship. Like, they've never had sex, or if they have, you know, it was like a 16, 15-year-old type of sex, which is, you know, never good, obviously. Like, no, like, very, I don't know if there's a lot of 16, I wasn't 16-year-old having sex, obviously, but maybe there are people having great sex at 16. I highly doubt it from the, you know, women I've talked to anyway. But anyway, my point is, like, they don't, like, you're telling them, you know, you could get emotionally hurt, you may not, you know, have the ability to develop a long-term relationship, but one, that may not be what they want, and two, they don't have a conception of that yet. So
no,
what kind of advice should you give them? Like, because all the stuff you're talking about is, okay, hey, be careful, you know, you might hurt yourself, you know, which are all negatives versus, yeah, just go out and have fun and have sex, explore, you know, watch out for these things.
You might be right. I mean,
you know, like, because I'm talking about guidelines from young people and old people too. But you know, it's a different discussion if you're a little older, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's probably what's come into play. I'm a bit older now. Like, I'm 29. So for me, if I went back in time to talk to myself, obviously I'm going to talk to myself from the context of me, which is like, now I know what I like. Now I know what I want. So if I went back and talked to the 18-year-old me, I would have told her, you know, take it easy. You go have fun, right? But don't, I guess, you know what? Maybe I would say what you've been saying. I haven't really thought about it. Maybe I would tell her that.
young Amy. Younger Amy. Because you're.
Yeah, younger Amy. Like, you know, just take good care of yourself and you'll meet someone, and don't ever feel that you have to do anything you don't want to. That's probably what I would tell myself. So I guess, I mean, that's my perspective. So
you're still placing it in the negative.
Sorry?
So maybe that's just a female thing. Like, you're still placing it in the negative.
I don't know.
Your advice is still, maybe that's just a feminine thing. Like, you know, you're still, you're framing it in the negative. Like, you're not saying, because you could have said, go out, and if you like someone, go have sex with them. Enjoy it. You might find a good long-term relationship, maybe not. But you said, how did you phrase it? Don't feel like you have to do something you don't want to do, which is a negative. Don't do this. The thou shalt not.
Maybe I should say, do what you want to do and think about it and make sure you want it and then go do it. Take it. You might be picking up on something here, but overall,
I think a lot of people have that. I'm picking on you. I apologize. I think we agree.
Signed up for.
I think anybody who talks to me signs up for that kind of thing. I think we agree on a lot of stuff. And, obviously when someone's, when you start to develop your values, I had a podcast with Jesse McCarthy who talks a lot about developing your values because he's a child development expert.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the story of the emperor's clothes. And one of the bits of advice that, Jesse has is like you know, part of the problem in that story is that the emperor and all the townspeople think that, what they see is, they're kind of afraid to see or to say that they don't see anything. And part of this social pressure is a desire, one, to be liked and to think that you're good at what you do. Like there's an element of doubt. But what you need to start developing is a knowledge of your own values. Like what do you really mm-hmm. like? For yourself intrinsically, innately. What is it about you, Amy, that's uniquely the values that you hold, the types of, do you like guys who ride horseback for some reason? Like, cause think that's sexy, right? Then what, or outdoorsy type man. Okay, great. Or do you like bookish indoorsy, big city boys that, wear suits and stuff. Like start to find these things. But when you're 18,
You have only
a few concrete examples, your parents, and you have no mm-hmm. real man examples. And so when you talk about people getting trapped, part of the trap, I think, is that they never went out and like, okay, let me kind of date and sleep with this kind of guy. Let me think about it. I mean, that's the danger. Yeah. If you have sex and you don't think about it afterwards, because you can't say I'm 20 years old. I want that. Like, you don't understand the want. Until you mm-hmm. express it and then think about it. Until you say, I want this thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I want it because I'm 19, I'm 20. Well, let me go out and mm-hmm. explore it. And I think this is true of 29-year-old people too. I don't think this is just a 19-year-old thing. I think it's a general mm-hmm. thing. But the great danger, and this poem, The Garden of Love, is all, and William Blake is all about this. The great danger is repressing it and pretending like it's not there. Like, oh, there's this cute guy, I really like him, but I don't want to have sex because what if people say this, or I don't know, blah blah blah. Like, that's why I think the advice should be, okay, educate kids on the dangers, like show them the reality of, if you're not careful, if you just meet some guy at a bar and you bang him, like you could get pregnant, or worse, you can get an STD. Like that type of thing you want to be careful of. But in general, sex is awesome, so go out and enjoy it.
you're right. I mean, I think that you're right. Like, from an 18-year-old perspective, you just don't know. You don't know, and you should figure that out. And I don't think you should be hindered in that way. I guess the real hesitation and caution for me comes is that you don't want to be trapped in that.
I agree. Forever. Thank God for right? the day That's after where,
No, I don't mean trapped in that way, because like some people get trapped in that lifestyle where they're just endlessly looking for a new novel.
But that's not sex's problem.
Experience.
That's not sex's right? fault. That's not the fault of sex.
No, I'm not saying
that's their own psychology. Right?
Yes, but the thing is, that's what we're discussing, is that there's a psychology. Like, I don't know what you think of this, but like, I think there's a lot of people in sexual relationships are just like there's no lasting value to anything. It's just like, oh, this one's,
that seems like a separate subject. I agree with you. I agree 100% with that problem.
It's just disposability of sexual partnerships, right? And I'm not saying like, oh, you should settle for anyone, I see people who are perpetually trapped mm-hmm. on Tinder or wherever, and they really desperately want a long-term relationship, but they're just like never able to find anything, and they just keep going through, and it's just empty.
That's a problem.
And I think that's all I wanted to speak to.
Well, I'm glad we brought it out finally. But do you understand what I'm saying? That has nothing to do with the idea of sex. The idea of like sex as an act.
Sex, yes.
And do you see how a lot of these feminists, a lot of the advice that not you, but just generally in our culture to anybody has a lot of implications of the negative sides only. And how horrible sex is as an implication. Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to say. And I agree with what you're trying to say. There's a lot of positive things. But for instance, one of the things that you see happening is a move, you know, like young people as they age, they have seemingly only two choices. They can go into religion and they can get everything taken care of, because that's one way to get advice, is you go to people who have been giving advice for thousands of years, right?
Yeah.
You know, versus the other way, which is to learn how to think for yourself and learn how to develop your own values. But that's fucking way harder than religion is Cliff Notes version of living life. Like the dumbed down Cliff Notes version for the handicapped person. I'm sorry, religious people. You're nice people, but the actual advice is so simplistic. Like do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that. Versus like the complexity of thinking for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you don't want to just take someone's word for anything, because you need to understand it and really, really integrate it into your understanding of the world. I'm not advocating like, oh, you should, 18-year-olds, just listen to what I say. I'm not saying that. And you're right. The only way to really truly learn is to go out there and, you know, make some successes, make some failures, extrapolate what values you know, that helps you along the way. And that's going to mean, there's a certain unpredictability, and you should embrace that. So I guess the only thing I took issue with is the word fuck fest. I don't think it's a good idea to go for a fuck fest. I think you should go out there, explore and learn. But don't be reckless.
Fuckfest. Have one fuckfest. Come on. One orgy. Come on.
I think that's where I would probably differ. But in general, I do agree. Like, you can't learn without going out there and exploring. And exploring should be fun. And it should be great. And it is great.
But it can also be scary. Like, if your explorers die. Yeah. So people want to have the risk, but not actually the negative possibilities in the risk. Like, I want to have exploration, but I would never want to get hurt or anything like that. Well, that's but the nature of exploration. It's like that there's a chance of getting hurt.
Yeah, and I think it's just important to be aware of both sides, because I think obviously sex is great, obviously, because that's why we do it. It feels amazing. It's great.
I don't know if
and
that's why
it's like easy Christians to it's easy to overlook that, you know, there are all these other things that could happen and you need to be careful of them. It doesn't mean like you shouldn't engage in it, but you need to know the risks as well as the benefits. So that doesn't mean sex is evil. That's not what I'm saying. I just don't think advocating for a fuck fest is.
All right, we'll have to agree to disagree. I think I'm not saying everyone should have sex with everyone all the time. I'm saying enjoy it as much as you can, and then develop your values and learn what kind of sex you like. I'm not convinced that multiple partners is not a thing that you can enjoy, like as even in a couple religion, but it's a whole other podcast.
Oh, really? Okay,
I don't know. Like, I don't know for sure.
I don't think that's
a lot of evidence now coming out about, you know, monogamy is definitely not what we're built for. Like, there's just so much evidence. It's crazy now. You know, like sexual desire among people who've been married 30 years, like it just, the sexual desire does not match that level of being with one person. It just, the facts are unequivocal, it seems to me. But anyway.
Well, I haven't seen that. I'll look into it. But generally, I don't think it's a good idea to do that.
I don't know, and I'm not giving anybody advice on that. I do think when you're younger, err on the side of if you want someone, go for it. You know, that's all I can say. That's the only advice I would say. If you want something, you want someone, go after it and try to get it, period.
Now, I agree. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Okay, so I know we've been talking for a while. I wanted to end on, you know, we're talking about this poem. We're talking about this Baby It's Cold Outside. I think the conclusion of Baby It's Cold Outside was, it's not rapey and you're an asshole if you even use the term rapey in a serious way. Like, if you're joking, that's different. But if you're writing an article and you're using it, or you're an NPR person, you're like, that was kind of rapey. Like, you're a fucking asshole. You're a dumbass jerk.
That's a jerkish thing to imply anything.
Yeah. And as to the poem, you know, one of the things I wanted to point out was the line that really stuck to me was the last two lines where it says, "And priests in black gowns were walking their grounds and binding with briars my joys and desires." Because the thing, William Blake is writing in the 1700s, late 1700s, early 1800s. And he's talking about like this resurgence of, you know, priests, literal priests who are trying to guilt and stop people from enjoying their sexual, you know, proclivities and the natural sexual inclinations that we have. And I see the same thing with feminists. So to me, feminists today, like even everyday feminists, like the feminists that are like, blah, 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 don't have sex with this, so that's a whore, or, you know, like, you know, all men are sexist or all men don't care about women, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That all I see with that is priests in black gowns. Like, the modern day feminist is a priest in black gowns, making their grounds and binding with briars my joys and desires. They're trying to put a wedge between a man and a woman enjoying a fuck fest.
And you know what? They have every right. They have every right to enjoy a fuck fest. They have every right.
But you know what I'm saying. I'm kidding.
I'm not going to disagree with that. If you want to have a fuck fest, and you know.
You know what I'm saying. I'm kidding, kind of, but you know what I'm saying. Like, they're getting in the way of that. And I hate this damned priesthood that we've developed. I hate it. It's the worst.
Yeah.
So that's all I got.
All right.
Any last words?
Oh, let's see.
You're tapped out. It's okay. You're tapped out. It was a great conversation. Wait, did you have something?
No, I think we got down to the heart of a lot of the kind of conflicts and in motivations in this realm. So I'm satisfied. I think it'll be interesting for people to listen to. So I'm happy with that.
We had a long conversation. It's been 2 hours.
It's been very long. Jesus. It's like, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for inviting me.